Hinshaw Insurance Law Radio is on the air. From Los Angeles, I'm Royal Oaks of ABC News and the law firm of Hinshaw & Culbertson, LLP, inviting you to join us for Hinshaw Law Radio. This program features prominent lawyers and insurance industry professionals discussing insurance and reinsurance cases, issues, and developments. Before we get started, a reminder that the information on Insurance Law Radio is provided for general information purposes only. Nothing stated in the program constitutes legal advice or creates any attorney-client relationship. You should consult directly with an attorney of your choosing if you wish to obtain any advice with respect to any claim or matter. Any views expressed are those of the guests and are not necessarily the views of Hinshaw & Culbertson, LLP, or any of its clients. And now we go to Chicago and your host for Insurance Law Radio, the co-chair of Hinshaw & Culbertson's National Insurance Services Practice Group, Scott Seaman.
Thank you, Royal Oaks, and boy, oh boy, I wish I could switch voices with you, and I'm sure our listeners wish the same thing. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Hinshaw's Insurance Law Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. There are several key insurance decisions pending in trial and appellate courts across the country, and in this broadcast, we are going to examine some of the pending insurance cases to watch, as well as some of the legislative and regulatory developments to watch in 2018. And we are once again joined by the great Jeff Sistrunk, the senior insurance reporter for Law 360. And we will look at some cases and legislation that Jeff identified in a couple of articles that he authored, I think dated January 1, 2018, in Law 360. So you can go back and refer to those great articles for citations and some more information about what we're going to discuss today. And time permitting, I will once again add a case or two to that list. So, Jeff, while you've done such a great job in covering the biggest cases in 2017, we're glad to have you back here to talk about the cases to watch in 2018. So, once again, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, the first case that you identified is really a pair of cases, Medidata versus Federal Insurance Company, which is pending in the Sixth Circuit, and American Tooling Center versus Travelers, a case pending in the Sixth Circuit. If I said on the first case, it's the Medidata cases in the Second Circuit. And these are a couple of cases that will decide in broad strokes whether computer fraud insurance policies cover losses from social engineering schemes. And, Jeff, could you walk us through these cases and let us know their significance?
Sure. So one of the biggest insurance coverage issues out there right now is the question of whether these computer fraud provisions in traditional crime policies cover what are known as social engineering schemes. And those are the types of schemes where you have, let's say, a criminal contacting you via email, pretending to be the executive of your company and requesting that you wire money to what turns out to be a fraudulent bank account. And courts have been divided on these issues, generally depending on what the language of the particular computer fraud provision says. So the Medidata and American Tooling cases represent the divide between courts. In Medidata, the New York federal court found coverage for a social engineering scheme by doing a really granular level detailed analysis of the means by which the fraud was carried out and how the fraudster manipulated an email account to make it appear as though it belonged to a Medidata executive. By contrast, the lower court in the American Tooling case found that there was no coverage based on its determination that there was no direct loss because there were a number of intervening steps in between the policyholder's reception of the email and the wire transfer. So, and these are two cases that'll be interesting to watch. to see whether the courts of appeals decide to find coverage or no coverage, or if they follow the lower courts and we wind up with a split among the circuits as to the availability of computer fraud coverage for these types of schemes.
Yeah, it's very interesting. In fact, you know, obviously cyber and data breach issues very prevalent. A lot of underlying cases. We're starting to get coverage cases, so much so we dedicated a chapter in our allocation book to the subject. But what makes it interesting is the language from policy to policy varies so much. And so it's an area of coverage where you really have to pay attention to the particular language, because unlike when we're dealing with general liability policies or even first-party policies that are often formed or based on forms, the language is varies considerably, not only from carrier to carrier, but over time. In this relatively short period of a decade, the language changes a lot. So next up is the Keyspan Gas East Corp case versus Munich, another important allocation decision pending before the New York Court of Appeals. Right, Jeff?
Right, and this case touches on an issue that's come up multiple times over the past year and a half in state Supreme Courts and Courts of Appeals, and that is the what's called the unavailability exception. And the idea there is that where you have a pro rata allocation under the so-called unavailability exception, if there was no insurance available in a given year for a certain risk, let's say pollution or asbestos liabilities, then the policyholder won't have to pick up the a share of the liability for the cost to defend and settle those sorts of claims. Now, in Keyspan, this is, as far as I know, the first time the New York Court of Appeals will have an opportunity to weigh in on the unavailability exception. And, you know, it's a high-stakes issue. You know, if the court sides with the policyholder, a Keyspan, you know, it could lead to an expansion of liability on the part of Keyspan's insurers. You know, and then from the policyholder standpoint, if the court finds that the policyholder does in fact have to pick up a share of the liability for years where coverage wasn't available, then that would obviously be more of a financial impact or burden on the policyholder. But it'll be interesting to see as well whether the Court of Appeals even reaches that issue. One argument that Keyspan is also making is that at the time the appellate division rendered its decision below, the Court of Appeals hadn't issued its landmark Viking Pump decision, finding under certain circumstances that an all sums allocation is permissible. So Keyspan has asked the Court of Appeals to find that all sums applies here. Arguably, if that happens, the court won't have to address the unavailability exception to pro rata allocation. So there's a great deal of moving parts here. So it'll be interesting to see how the court handles all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. My recollection is Keyspan did not have the non-cum provisions that were present in Viking Pumps. Is that, am I recalling that correctly?
Yeah, that sounds right to me. Keyspan has taken the position that they have provisions comparable to the non-cum clauses, but the appellate division, I believe, found that those types of provisions weren't present.
Yeah, you are right that if the High Court of New York addresses the unavailability exception. It would be the first time it had considered that issue. And, you know, I just add to that that we say that most courts that have gone pro rata as opposed to all sums have recognized that pro rata allocation and allocation to the policyholder for periods of time where insurance is insufficient or unavailable for any reason go together like peanut butter and jelly. The fourth case is the Vibram case, which is before the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, and that's another interesting case having to deal with rights of reimbursement, right?
That's right. Yeah, so this case involves an interesting set of underlying facts. The shoemaker, Vibram, was accused of misappropriating the likeness of an former Olympic running champion who made headlines for running barefoot. From a coverage standpoint, there are a couple issues that have made their way to the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court. One deals generally with the availability of advertising injury coverage as applied to the facts of this case. But the one that's probably going to have more of a widespread impact is the issue of whether the insurance carrier for Vibram has a right to recoup costs that it had already paid out on Vibram's behalf as it was defending under a reservation of rights because there was later a determination that the claims against Vibram weren't covered by the policies. And that's another potentially high-stakes issue. As insurance practitioners know, defense costs can often far exceed any settlement or judgment cost. So whether or not the insurance carrier has a right to reimbursement when it's defending under a reservation of rights will have a significant financial impact, regardless of which way the court goes. It'll just be a matter of whether the insurance company has to foot the bill or if the policyholder has to pick up the tab if it's later determined that the claims against it weren't covered.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fifth case on your hit list was Office Depot versus AIG, pending in the Ninth Circuit. Real quickly, what's your take on that?
So in this case, the Ninth Circuit will be addressing whether a California statute that forbids insurance for willful acts applies to the entirety of an underlying California False Claims Act suit against Office Depot. Here, Office Depot was sued over its alleged practice of overbilling California government agencies for office supplies. And what the California federal court found was that this statute barred coverage for both the defense and indemnity costs that Office Depot incurred because it was accused of acting willfully and overcharging these public entities. What Office Depot is saying on appeal is that the complaint against it contained allegations that amounted to mere negligence and that therefore it was improper for the lower court to find that coverage was unavailable for the complaint as a whole. And this is a case that, has policyholder advocates concerned. They think that if the Ninth Circuit upholds the lower court's decision, that it could lead to more widespread coverage denials for cases that arguably only allege willful acts. you know, even where there might be some allegations of negligence. So yeah, another one to watch, and another one that might have potentially huge financial implications.
Well, exactly. Another decision under Section 533, another question of fortuity, a fundamental element of liability insurance, the case properly, well-reasoned decision by the district court, and hopefully the Ninth Circuit will affirm. Jeff, I just wanted to add a couple cases to your list of cases to watch. The first one is Continental versus Honeywell, argued in October before the New Jersey Supreme Court. The court is asked to decide a choice of law issue, but interestingly enough, the New Jersey Supreme Court, which is the court that gave birth to the distinct minority unavailability of insurance exception to the general rule of allocating to the insured under a pro rata allocation, back in its Owens, Illinois decision, the court now has an opportunity, if it decides to address the issue, to either limit or eliminate the unavailability of insurance exception, or to recognize exceptional circumstances warranting departure from that exception. Another case to watch is the Global Re versus Century Indemnity case, a reinsurance case returning to the Second Circuit after the New York Court of Appeals answering a certified question on the Belafonte cap issue that we discussed in our last broadcast. And finally, the R.T. Vanderbilt decision of the Connecticut Intermediate Appellate Court addressing trigger and allocation and unavailability of insurance in the context of asbestos claims. And it'd be interesting to see what, if anything, the Connecticut Supreme Court does on that. And I wanted to spend just a few minutes talking about some of the legislation and regulation pieces you identified, one of which was the cybersecurity regulations from the New York Department of Financial Services and really effectively the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Can you just, in a minute, highlight for people what to look for, the scope of those regulations?
Sure. So late last year, the NAIC, following the lead of the New York Department of Financial Services, whose cybersecurity regulation has already gone into effect, rolled out this cybersecurity model law that sets out a number of potential requirements for insurance licensees, so insurers, agents, brokers, and the like, including what they have to do in terms of maintaining sufficient cybersecurity protections, what the proper protocol is in the event of a data breach, and a number of other things. So being as it's a model law, each of the other 49 states now has to take a look and decide whether to adopt a version of the NAIC's model law. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, as in the past with NAIC guidance, you know, there's a bit of leeway as far as what each individual state chooses to do. So it'll definitely be something to watch in 2018 as states continue to grapple with cybersecurity.
Yeah, and it's something obviously all insurers are grappling with, as well as, you know, all commercial entities really. And, you know, this is nothing new or nothing hoisted upon people without notice, in the sense that the New York regulations had been proposed for some time, and there was a, you know, a significant period of time before compliance was required. So this is something insurers obviously have been looking at, but it's also the type of issue that's going to continue on for the rest of our life, certainly as we deal with the cyber breaches. The other thing, again, very briefly, the U.S.-European Union covered agreement.
Yeah, so the covered agreement, as folks in the industry know, after years of negotiations, was finalized in the latter half of 2017. and provides for a number of measures to even the playing field between U.S. Insurers and reinsurers and their EU counterparts. And one of the big aspects of the covered agreement that's gotten a lot of press is its elimination of reinsurance collateral requirements for EU reinsurers doing business in the U.S. That's something that EU domiciled reinsurers had often taken issue with, you know, as being unfair. So in 2018, we'll just be keeping an eye on how the states go about implementing the covered agreements. A majority of them already have credit for reinsurance laws in effect that were based on the NAIC's guidance on that issue. So it'll just continue to be a slow but sure rollout, you know, and leading up to full implementation a couple of years down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And the third piece of legislation you were focused on was the National Flood Insurance Program.
Right, and this is one that has been kicking around for years and years. I can't even count the number of the number of NFIP flood insurance reform bills that have, you know, started in Congress and not made it. We are probably the closest we've been on that issue. The House of Representatives passed a package of bills back a few months ago to address a number of issues, including opening up the private flood insurance market, updating flood mapping, and generally just finding ways to make the NFIP, you know, a little less, shoulder a little less of the burden, you know, of these recent natural disasters. So the Senate now has to take action on the House legislation, and it remains to be seen when or if they'll do that. They've already Congress has already passed a couple of short-term extensions of the NFIP, but there's been a lot of clamoring among tons of different stakeholders in the insurance industry for comprehensive reform. So that's something that I'm sure the industry will continue to lobby for in 2018.
And we'll see whether or not this is yet another piece of legislation passed by the House that finds a graveyard in the Senate, or whether the Senate and House come together on a bill to present to President Trump. The final thing that you identified was the assignment of benefits legislation in Florida. What's that all about?
Sure. So the assignment of benefits issue is something that's been a serious cause for concern among insurance carriers in Florida over the past few years. Basically, an assignment of benefits occurs when, let's say, you know, a water removal service or a roofer comes in after a storm to fix a policyholder's property. What they can do is receive an assignment of the benefits under the homeowner's insurance policy and turn around and pursue direct payment from the insurance carrier. Now, what some contractors have done allegedly is mark up their rates, you know, make unnecessary or excessive repairs, and then receive the assignment of benefits and turned around and pursued arguably, you know, excessive payment or overpayment. Now, this is an issue that, you know, as with the NFIP on the federal level, stakeholders have sought reform on this for many years, and several bills have died in the Florida, you know, in the Florida legislature. There was a bill that was voted out of a judicial committee just last year that would try to discourage abuse of the assignment of benefits system by, among other things, making it more difficult for prevailing parties to obtain attorney's fees. So, yeah, now it's before the full Florida House. So there's obviously a lot of work left to do there.
Is this limited to first-party coverage?
Yes. So this will be just applicable to first-party property damage claims. And with major storms like Irma, this is something that's become more of a concern just even in the past few months.
Well, I have to say, Jeff, one of the great things and great services you do is you take the burden off of all of us interested folks and having to track these pieces of legislation and these cases because you're Johnny on the spot in your Law 360 report. So as soon as any major development happens, whether the legislation passes, is rejected, or whether when we get rulings by the appellate courts and the various cases we discussed, Law 360 and Jeff Sestrup will be all over them, correct?
We will.
The one thing I wanted to mention briefly is something that's not a case, it's not a piece of legislation, it's not a regulation. It is the American Law Institute's impending restatement of the law liability insurance that is expected to be voted on and released in 2018. And those familiar with the process, the prior drafts and the latest draft plainly understand that this document is authored by a so-called reporter who is a policyholder's advocate and unfortunately appears to be little more than a policyholder advocacy piece masquerading as a restatement. The latest draft and prior drafts misstated the law on many significant points and often evinces policyholder bias, sometimes subtly and sometimes fairly blatantly, in various portions of its black letter law, its comments and the reporter's notes. Obviously, this is something we're watching closely as well. Hopefully, the light bulbs will go off and the American Law Institute will prevail to do something more consistent with the historical reputation it has as opposed to this advocacy piece in its current form. But look, there are many interesting cases pending and a lot of legislative and regulatory developments to keep our eyes on in 2018 and beyond. And once again, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us here on Hinshaw Insurance Law Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
And we'll have you back real soon, maybe mid-year, to go over some developments in the world of insurance law.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And we might see some of these cases or pieces of legislation move forward to conclusion.
Thank you once again, Jeff. This is Scott Seaman thanking all of you for joining us on Hinshaw's Insurance Law Radio. We look forward to speaking to you soon on other topics of interest to insurance and reinsurance practitioners, professionals, and decision makers.
You've been listening to Hinshaw & Culbertson LLP's Insurance Law Radio. The information contained in this program is provided solely for general informational purposes and does not constitute legal advice. For information on past and upcoming Insurance Law Radio programs, visit the Insurance Services Practice Group page of www.hinshawlaw.com. This is Royal Oaks thanking you for joining us and inviting you to join us for the next episode of Insurance Law Radio.